I grew up in the Mormon Church. Born and raised, as they say. Even during the times of inactivity, I still considered myself to be a true believing Mormon. Times and people change, and when someone pushes you to reevaluate your beliefs, you sometimes realize how wrong you were. 2016 was the year I moved from Mormonville to Heathensburg. I'm Molly Ann Mormon. Welcome to Doubting Dogma, where I explore my new views and new friendships, moving on without religious belief. Happy Sunday, everybody, coming to you from the Isle of Heathens. This is Doubting Dogma. I am Molly Ann Mormon, and Riss unfortunately will not be joining us today. She has lost her voice from too much podcasting, I think she said. So hopefully I don't bore you guys to death. Today I figured I would talk about the church's view on sexuality and how that has affected me, because it has been a huge part of my life. It seems really relevant right now too. So I don't think it's a surprise that the church is super regressive about it. And it was a constant thing that they talked about, especially once you reach your teenage years and young women's and everything. You were taught that the worst sin ever is murder. After that is sex outside of marriage. And going along with that is any sexual thoughts, masturbation, open mouth kissing, necking, petting, as they called it. And they always stressed, you're not to do this, you're not to do this. And I've brought it up before, I'm pretty sure that in the Mormon view, even inside of marriage, there are certain things you're not to do. And if I had to list those things off, probably anything other than just missionary with the lights off, right? So when it's stressed that much, I mean, it affects you. In seventh grade, we had our sex ed class. You know, it was part of the elective block that included PE. Well, not elective block, but everyone had PE. And then half the year was then health and sex ed. And I was able to stay in the health ed for the one quarter. But then when it came to sex ed, my parents had me taken from sex ed. And then so I ended up in PE for that. And so there are so many things that, you know, everyone else was learning that I was not. And so I learned most of what I knew about sex at the time just by gleaning information from what other kids were talking about or from friends that understood that I was extremely sheltered. I think it's no surprise that my parents never sat down and gave my sisters and I, quote unquote, the talk. You know, so I mean, I didn't know how it worked. Having sexuality and acknowledging it and embracing it was so frowned upon, well, more than just frowned upon, but condemned, that even when I was a teenager and there was a church dance, and I met a boy and we ended up talking and holding hands, that my anxiety that I now acknowledge was very prevalent even then, my anxiety kicked in and I was sick. I was, that night, I couldn't sleep, I was thrown up, I just, because to me, it was something I wasn't supposed to be doing, and all I did was hold his hand. So when you've got an environment like that, it, in my opinion, well, I'm sure in many people's opinion, is very damaging. My mom had told me a story about, I don't know, some couple that didn't kiss until they got married. And I was like, oh, that's awesome. I'm going to do that. So I had this idea in my head that I wasn't going to kiss anybody until the wedding ceremony. So my first boyfriend in college, boyfriend air quotes, gave me a hard time about that. And he was a member. That didn't last long. Anyways, boyfriend, after that, we had been together for a bit. I found out he was younger than me, which was, well, the first problem. Because, I mean, I was just I was a sophomore in college. So, I mean, I was 19. At one point, even though he knew that this was my goal, that I was going to not kiss anyone until I got married. At one point, I guess he got tired of that and he kissed me. Once that line was crossed, I was having trouble redefining my boundaries. And I know that sounds really stupid, but I was having issues with that. But he went off, joined the army, and it was actually because of him that I had the thought of joining the army after I got discouraged with school and classes and everything like that. And it was during basic training, I was feeling super guilty about things that he and I had done. So I had talked to the bishop about it. He had said I was fine, you know, I was doing good, whatever. But the guilt, like, super weighed on me. It was something I couldn't shake off. So when I got to my first duty station, I made it a point to go to church, and I found the church, and I was attending meetings. I was doing everything that I was supposed to as a young woman. And I was there for a few months before I got a boyfriend and the first of my Me Too instances happened. And I don't want to go into the details, but because of him, there were certain things I would not do. And I lost my virginity to him. And he was controlling. He was, basically, he was just a horrible human being. And I have racked my brain about why or how I let him take advantage. And it always seems to come back to, I didn't feel I was worth it. But now that I had lost my virginity, I didn't know what to do. I felt lost. I was still attending church, but I was quiet. I didn't talk to so many people. I felt this huge heap of guilt for what I had done. I broke up with him, and after a while started dating someone else, and that relationship, I thought, was the one. And so, because we had been talking about getting married, I didn't feel as guilty sleeping with him. So when he went back to Germany, because he was a German airman, when he went back to Germany and I didn't hear from him, he, like, dropped off the face of the planet. And this is when a lot of my depressive symptoms really started showing up, because I, again, felt like it was my fault. I wasn't worth it. I mean, it was really affecting my self-esteem. And I kept holding on. I would write him and write him and write him, and I would rarely hear back. And after months of this, I finally gave up. I'm not sure how accurate this is, but I personally believe that these feelings of inadequacy set a precedent for me that I didn't think I was good enough, didn't think I was worth it, and so I would settle in these emotionally abusive relationships. And one of them, I mean, they never started out that way. And one of them, I was, because I had lost my virginity and felt that I was not worth it. I wasn't a good quote-unquote Mormon girl. I started dating this guy from church, but I knew that he had his own background that he was trying to overcome because he had lost his mom when he was a teenager. And by his own admission, he was then angry at God, and he had fallen away from the church, and he was doing drugs and other things. And when I met him, he was trying to turn his life around and come back to church and everything like that. And he had told me about this, and so I had thought that if anyone would not judge me for my own quote-unquote sins, it would be him, because he had even more in his background. And it started out well, but he would get upset about things, and he wouldn't talk about it. But if something was upsetting me, and I didn't want to talk about it, he would keep pushing and pushing and pushing until I would break. And, well, more than that, I mean, he wasn't trusting at all. He would go through my phone. He read my journal, and not just once. And it was sort of all these things that kept building up that I was finally like, I'm done. And it was a messy breakup, and I mean, it was one of these things that, again, by the end, left me feeling broken and like I was never going to have a family, because this was the sort of man in the church. And so between him and the German that I had dated, it really left me feeling like I had no worth. So when someone from work had started flirting with me, I, even though there were certain things about him that I knew was not good for me, other than the fact that he was a coworker, I went along with it. And again, the further into the relationship we got, the more controlling and abusive he was. To the point that, I mean, we had talked about I wanted a child, and he had offered to father it. But at the same time, he was believing rumors from people at work after he had shown them things meant only for him, and then they began telling him that they had been intimate with me, which was a lie. But he believed them over me and wanted to know, well, why would they say that? And at one point he said that he would give me a child if I was completely faithful for a year, but if I wasn't, he would kill me. And due to the fact that he couldn't go a week or two without accusing me of sleeping with someone else when I wasn't, that wasn't a gamble I was going to take. And I said, no. And his response was, well, that was a test and you failed. And it was this sort of control that I was stuck in. I don't want to say I was stuck, but I felt stuck. And because I felt like I wasn't worth it, anytime he would get angry at me, I would apologize and I would beg for him to come back and tell him that I loved him and all this. And it was extremely detrimental and damaging. And even after we had at one point agreed to go our separate ways. And it had supposedly ended amicably. I mean, he would still reach out and get upset at certain things. And so when I met my husband, I didn't tell this coworker about it because the work environment was already so delicate. I had to walk on eggshells at work. And moving away from that situation was really, I think, the only option I had. And it was only after moving here and getting away from him and marrying my husband, who's so completely unlike him, that I have finally been able to start piecing myself back together and really seeing him for what he was and seeing the impact that all this sexual regression and pressure and everything from the church and the way I grew up and seeing the way that it affected me. And that's, and I'm sorry if this was a little vague, but there are certain aspects that I still can't really discuss in detail. But I hope this was enlightening, informative, and didn't bore you to death. But real quick, I want to thank a couple of patrons who have increased their donation. The Odd Atheist Friends podcast and Sojo. And Sojo actually reached out to me in another email and we chatted a bit. And so shout out to Sojo. Hang in there. I can't say what's best for you in your situation because I'm still trying to figure out my own. But know that if you need to talk, you can reach out to me and I will respond to that email as quick as I can. So I will wrap things up here before I bore you all to death. Sorry, this has been a short episode, but like I said, I'm just first time trying to fly solo. So thank you all for listening and good night. I want to thank you for joining us. If you like what you hear, please consider supporting the show on Patreon at patreon.com/doubtingdogma or leave a review on iTunes. You can follow the show on Facebook at facebook.com/doubtingdogma or on Twitter at doubtingdogma. The intro music was written and performed by Marissa Alexa McCool and was used with her permission.